Hello, the internet, and welcome to season 27, episode 4 of Der Daily Zeitgeist!
Yeah.
Gross. For April 19th, 2018, my name is Jack O'Brien, aka Potatoes O'Brien, and I am thrilled to be joined, as always, by my co-host, Mr. Miles Gray!
Let me hear you say, ooh, ah, Summer Miles smoking THC. And that one is from AKA Goddess Chapman Rice. Thank you for that one. You hit me with a late night blitz of tweets. Sometimes I'm worried about your hours of tweeting, but that is your prerogative to tweet when you like. So do you.
Mm. And you added the little THC.
I did. It was supposed to be summertime in the LBC, but you know what? I'm single-minded.
Mm. And we are thrilled to be joined in our third seat by the hilarious comedy writer who you may know from Crackle, Mr. Daniel O'Brien!
Hey! Thank you so much for having me. Quick shout-outs. Yesterday was my mom's birthday. Happy birthday, Mom. Today is my brother's birthday. Happy birthday, Tommy.
Wow. Clustered all around each other.
What was that like when you had...
Tomorrow's Hitler's birthday.
So many birthdays.
Whoa, weird.
Oh, yeah, so Grandpa.
It made it really easy to remember the order of their birthdays because Mom came first, and then, like, the gift that she gave to herself was her firstborn
son
the next day.
Did they ever have to do... Would they share a birthday party?
Absolutely not.
Oh, okay. No. So there was some sanctity of the birthday. Because I felt like I had friends who had, like, birthdays near their siblings, and they'd be like, it's a joint birthday. I'm like, that would suck.
Yeah, that's no good.
Yeah.
I have a birthday that's right around Christmas, and it gets lost in that space.
Did you ever do double gifts?
Oh, yeah, all the time.
Oh,
yeah,
look at you. You would get a birthday. You would have the same amount of birthday gifts and Christmas gifts, or they're like, hey, brother, it's birthday,
Christmas. Oh, then I guess I mean, like, cut that in half. I would get relatives that were like, this is, like, birthday and Christmas gifts.
They would double up on the significance of their single
gift. They're two birds in it.
Yeah.
Right. January
4th? Ooh, this is private information.
Sorry.
I never reveal my birthday on the internet.
All right. Well, I will not do that then.
Oh.
Well, Daniel.
let's just say a real one. It's February 33rd, right?
Perfect.
Right, around Christmas.
The same day as Beetlejuice.
Yeah. So, Daniel, you emailed us sheepishly a couple weeks ago. And you were like, hey, you have me booked for 420. And you might want someone else for that.
Yeah.
Someone like cool.
It was a super humbling email to send. Like, if you guys are looking for like somebody
adorable.
Who's like down and neat.
That's down and neat.
A few years ago.
As the kids say.
Throw up your hands, stomp your feet. Let me know if you're down and neat. Down and neat. What a combo of traits.
Daniel, what's something from your search history that is revealing about who you are as a human being?
Who is running Rivers Cuomo's Twitter account?
Oh.
I've been following him for a while, and I'm convinced that it's either a bot or there's another conspiracy theory going around that he's not actually tweeting. He's just, like, finding things that people say and copying and pasting them into his feed. I don't think that's true because I try to do a search on, like, the actual content of his tweets, and they're not coming up anywhere else. But he just has a very strange Twitter style. Entering this new Mac Daddy phase is something he says.
That's one of his tweets?
Mm-hmm.
Entering this new Mac Daddy phase?
Yes. A nice 6 a.m. Tinder session to start the day.
Gross.
And yeah, for people who don't know, this is Rivers Cuomo from Weezer.
Oh, yeah. Frontman of Weezer. And he talked about Weezer a lot. He said, Weezer made me paint my nails like a girl. Are you really the Weezer singer? And he spells girl like G-U-R-L. And he uses like a lot of... emojis and like JKLOL. He tweets very much like a middle schooler or a high school person.
He also tweets like a lazy person who never had to be creative to get likes. So, you know, because he has a fan base, he can just do a stream of consciousness Twitter and everyone's going to be like, oh my God, I love it when he just put, whose idea was it to make me so sensitive?
Yeah. Right. It's and I don't know why I'm obsessed with it. I think because I think he's a really silly and strange person. Like, do you know how he writes songs?
No.
It's garbage. I hate it. he was on Song Exploder talking about his process, and musically, he'll listen to another band doing like he likes that chord progression, so he just records himself playing the chord progression that somebody else did, and then like adding Weezer effects to the guitar, and then files that somewhere. And then for lyrics, he just wanders around the world and will hear someone say something like, oh, I gotta pick up Sharon at school. And then he writes down, gotta pick up Sharon at school. And then when he's ready to write a song, goes to, here's my list of chord progressions
that I like,
and here are my list of words that I've collected from other people talking, and let me just put them together. None of my songs actually mean anything because I'm just like stealing words from the air.
Mm.
And oh, yeah. what a
terrible person,
right?
I mean,
also
I think he would do that with meaning.
I know right. It doesn't.
Oh, well, what are you gonna do?
So he's basically narking on some kids when he wrote that hash pipe song.
Yeah.
I mean, it's I can't love my business if I can't get a trick down on Santa Monica where tricks are for kids.
Ooh.
Whoa. I guess he must have just heard that shit.
Yeah. One of my favorite sketches Daniel ever wrote at Cracked was a mockumentary about Rivers Cuomo. It was immediately after he had survived a bad bus accident, and Daniel wrote a sketch because I think we had access to Weezer potentially.
Yeah.
And so you wrote a sketch in which you speculated that Rivers Cuomo was a Highlander and, you know, it went like 300 years back and you could like see him in pictures. and Weezer was like, oh, we love this. This is great. And we were really excited about it and we were going to make this and it was going to be a big deal, put us on the map, maybe put us in Jeopardy questions someday.
Mm-hmm.
And then they just were like, oh, sorry, Rivers is in Japan meditating for the next 3 years.
Yeah, sorry.
Rivers is entering his new Mac Daddy phase.
Yeah.
I forgot about that. I guess I've been obsessed with Rivers Cuomo for a very long time.
You have.
Clearly, you're like, oh, I forgot I wrote an epic sketch about the
really,
origin story
really good.
Of him.
Yeah, and I guess we should mention the fact that I've alluded to a couple times. So Cracked was the answer on Jeopardy last night,
yeah.
I believe.
Yeah.
I believe we have the audio.
After Hours and Excessive Pop Culture Discussion are two shows on this fractured website's channel. Allie?
What is Crackle?
No.
Boom.
Rishab.
What is Cracked?
Cracked.
There you go.
He was ready with that answer.
Yeah, I know. He must have been laughing. Crackle, come on now.
The
awful Sony-owned video platform.
Right.
Anytime
like an adult or, you know, somebody who I would expect not to know Cracked would be like, oh, I know Cracked. That's like a great website. I can't believe you work for them. So you work with Seinfeld?
Yeah.
on comedians and cars getting
coffee? I was just watching Ace Ventura 2 on there.
Right. Yeah, exactly. I don't think that, sure. Yeah, that's me.
Whatever.
But yeah.
How's that feel?
Pretty cool, man.
Yeah,
those are both
a Jeopardy answer.
So After Hours is a show you and I created together, mm-hmm. and
Excessive Pop Culture Discussion.
That
was
a show that you hosted, and
I did that show with Maggie Mae Fish and Soren Bowie.
Right,
and nobody name drops that show. Most of the people who like it don't even know they got
it
wrong.
I was
surprised
by that.
They get confused with the other show that
right.
is very similarly named.
Obsessive Pop Culture Disorder.
Yeah,
which is a great title for a show.
Yeah,
and a great show.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You could have stopped.
Come on,
I would
Jeopardy.
Have taken the win at title. Great title. Thanks. I'm so proud of it.
I guess we're a big deal now.
Yeah, we're cultural icons.
Yes.
Yeah.
What is something you think is underrated?
People who cut hair.
Underrated.
I think they get. I mean, I don't like getting my hair cut because it's like a closeness thing that I'm uncomfortable with.
Like intimacy issues.
Like if I was smooching my hairdresser, sure, that would be one thing. But this is a borderline stranger.
Oh,
the one who
cuts
my hair, I like a whole lot because she knows that I don't like to look in the mirror or talk to anyone. So she just faces me away from the mirror.
Wait. You don't like to see the haircut going down?
No. And I don't
like
I don't like staring at myself for however long a haircut takes. It's just not a pleasant experience for me. so that's a good situation. I really like. Shout out to the woman whose name I don't know because we've never had a conversation.
Wait. So how do you even get this person to cut your hair if you don't even know their name?
I just go
you
to
just pull up and you're like you
that
right
one.
Yeah.
Me?
I go to Floyd's and I know when she's working and she's just like I will take this one.
She's like, oh, I should take him.
But they're underrated because the last time I got a haircut, there was a guy getting his haircut next to me, and like, God bless this poor guy. He went in and he was like very apologetic to the woman cutting his hair. He was like, I'm really sorry. I'm very sweaty all the time, and I'm itchy, and like, you're gonna see a bunch of scabs on the back of my neck. That I don't think they're bleeding right now, but they might be. And he's like being a dear sweet soul about this. And the woman cutting his hair is like, no, it's totally fine. It's okay. I'm gonna just like cut your hair, and I feel like they probably have to deal with a lot of gross, uncomfortable
people
because everyone
sure.
needs haircuts, and I feel like they have the same level of like touching the gross parts of strangers that like dentists and doctors get, but nowhere near the amount of pay.
Right,
right, right, right, right.
It just seems like they have to deal with a pretty gross job, and they all do it with such grace, and right. I appreciate that.
We call yeah. that chairside manner.
Yeah. Ooh. It's like when the thing that waitresses complain about like having to deal with awkward dudes who are like, hey, so do you have a boyfriend? Like right. when they first ask them if they want appetizers. And like, except you have to stay with them for right, like right. 45 minutes.
Dude, why did you ask her that? Well, she wrote her name down on the tablecloth.
Right, right, exactly. Yeah, as a caveat to this, also underrated is people who cut children's hair.
It oh, is yeah,
an
right.
impossible job. And we have this young woman, Sandy, who cuts my son's hair. She's doing everything that a barber does, except she's doing it like in motion, like just moving with my son's like rapidly, right. you know, moving head. And it's insane. It's like a contact sport. It's really impressive.
Is it a special like service or person that you need to go to? You can't just go to Floyd's?
Yeah, and... you can't go okay. to Floyd's. Yeah. There's a
children's haircutting places.
Yeah.
The
yeah.
place I used to go to in the valley called the Yellow Balloon was legendary for getting kids haircut. And it was also because it was the most like stimulating interior of a thing ever. Like there were fucking lights and arcade yeah. machines. So like when I sat down, you would just be like, huh?
Yeah.
And then they could just be like, okay, you're done. You're done.
Yeah. Get she has man. Just like a box of toys that she like gives right. him, and like he'll get bored with it after like even before he gets bored with it, she can tell he's getting bored and she like switches it out real quick.
Damn.
It's really like an incredible.
That should be like, man, that's like an extra service. Like yeah. I would be like, I'm sorry, that's $300.
Really? It's incredible.
Did you see how I finessed the toy switch seamlessly?
Yeah. What's something you think is overrated, Daniel?
This is going to be very alienating for most of the listeners. It's these things called bird scooters that are all around right now, Westwood, Venice, and Santa Monica.
Yeah.
And I live in one of those places. Mm-hmm. And they're scooters. They're sort of like the city bikes where you can just rent one with money. I think you get an app to rent a scooter, and then you can just ride it around. The difference between the bird scooters and city bikes is city bikes have like a home. There's
right.
a place where you park those bikes when you're done. And then that's it. The bird scooters, the, I guess, appeal of them for the people getting them is you can just drop them
wherever the fuck
and that's
want.
And where yeah. they land, that's it. And I have two problems with this. One of them is a fake one that masks the real one that is like bougie and petty. The fake one is that I see kids, like two kids on one scooter, and they're not wearing helmets, and they're like 10 or 11 years old, and they're just booking it down
a street
like there's Wilshire yeah. that's a very busy street. There's
it's like a standing moped. It shouldn't yeah. be legal.
Yeah, yeah, it's the oh yeah they're motorized scooters, by the yes, way. It's not yes. just like you're not like kicking with your foot. And I think that's dangerous. These kids are gonna die. And that's what I always lead with as my complaint with it, but I don't
right you're
really
the,
care
you're the,
about
these
that.
Kids are gonna die right. guy.
My real problem is that it just ruins like the look of very nice neighborhoods, and I walk my dog, and I used to like looking around the area. There's people with well-maintained lawns and nice trees, and I near a park, and now there are these garish black scooters that are just strewn about everywhere. People just like pull up on the sidewalk and just drop them
right.
on a lawn or on a corner somewhere, and it's bougie, annoying thing to rant about, but like... this neighborhood used to be nice, and now
before these damn scooters came in, and these kids, I mean, they're going to hurt themselves.
They're going to hurt themselves. I care about the kids. And
that's why
like...
I don't want a basketball court here, because they might hurt themselves.
But yeah, they just showed up one day, and everybody started using them. So that's also my concern with them, is that they seem like a really useful idea for like people who live in a certain type of community where, you know, you have long distances to travel that aren't quite drivable, or you don't want to deal with parking when you get there. So I do think these things are going to take over at some point in the future.
How do they get that like regulated? You know what I mean? Because you could just be a kid on there and injure yourself or drunk or mm-hmm. whatever. Because the first time I saw it was on Abbot Kinney in Venice, and I just saw the dude ditch the scooter and like go somewhere. And I was like, fuck, this guy just yeah. left an electric scooter in the fucking street.
Right.
And someone was like, no, man, it's a cool app.
Yeah.
And it was like blocking the sidewalk.
Yeah.
And that's where I'm like, yo, you need a place to put these.
That's also such a like garbage response that someone gave you, like, hey, just left a scooter. No, it's a cool app.
It's a cool app. Like,
you could do it with your phone, Miles.
Yeah, no, you look like an asshole who just left right. a fucking piece of garbage in the street.
But they're all being tracked, like,
right.
on
yeah,
a,
you
on
can't
app,
steal
so
it, but like
you can't steal it.
But that was before I knew it was a rental thing. I just thought it was some arrogant asshole who just pulled up on an e-scooter and was like, yeah, I'll just fucking leave it here and go into the ice cream
shop. Just a very rich guy.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, it's like a real rich guy move. Just,
yeah. It's like, I don't know, you want it? You can have it. I don't care. I'll buy another one.
Shit. Yeah, and instead of being useless and disappearing, now there's like a second type of scooter. Like a second company has come in and been like, wow, this is a billion-dollar idea. So now not only are there Bird scooters, there are Lime scooters. So we have our Lyft to Bird's Uber.
Hey, boy.
Yeah, so it's going down, guys. Watch out for it. And finally, Daniel, what is a myth? What's something people think is true that you know to be false?
Someone cooler than me might, I'm looking at you, Miles, might tell me if I'm wrong about this, but I think the myth that I want to debunk is the rebound fling after a breakup. I think that's entirely an invention of movies and TV shows, because it's really convenient for plot. If you've got two characters who are in a relationship and they break up, a good plot thing is getting them with someone else briefly, because then the old couple can fight about it, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Really helps move a season of Friends along.
Mm-hmm. You know what we got to do for you, man? We got to get you laid, bro.
Yeah. Which,
that friend who's always in those shows.
Right, which I don't have that friend in real life. I've never been that friend in real life. And I'm happy to be proven wrong and just someone to be like, no, you have like a very specific group of friends. The rest of the world does do a rebound thing after a long relationship, and there's like a big scientific reason behind it. But it just hasn't been my experience, and I feel like if I had just broken up with someone and a friend was like, you need to go find someone else right away, I'd be like, no, that's terrible advice. I need to like figure out why this relationship ended and check in with myself and spend a little time with me.
Well, and I think that's,
and like, please support me in this.
That's precisely it, though. You know, that's you being a person of sound mind, or attempting to be like, let me kind of do a little introspective here and figure out what is going on. Where some person may not want to visit the chaos of their own psyche and go, ah, fuck it, let's just go out and try and fuck real quick.
Right, right.
Rather than be like, are you falling into your pattern again? Because you know you've never been alone for more than 3 months at a time.
Right.
I think people like that typically like to fall into the rebound thing, because sometimes people just don't know how to operate outside of a relationship.
Yeah, I think that's definitely true, that there are just people who are always in relationships. I know a lot of people like that. And for them, the rebound thing is a thing just because they're always in a relationship.
Yeah, because they're rebooting the system.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I definitely think that's not necessarily true for
everyone.
Yeah.
But some people, I think for some people it is healthy. Like if you sometimes have getting into a relationship after you've been broken up with or something can kind of give you sort of validation, especially if you take a knock to your self-esteem if someone
ripped your
heart out.
See, Miles is that friend.
Yeah.
He's
like,
we got to get you laid,
bro. All right, man, let's do it. Let's go to Best Buy, because you know I kill there.
Best Buy.
Yeah, man.
There's also an article about how grocery stores are the new hookup market, or the new hookup scene for kids.
Do you know that Ralph's, Jack, that is...
by our neighborhood.
Somewhere near us.
The world's biggest Ralph's.
Is this the world's biggest Ralph's?
Hey, well, now I know where y'all live.
They have a sushi restaurant and a bar inside the Ralph's.
They do.
Which coming from Jersey, I know I've been here 10 years, but still, like, that's unheard of in Jersey. We don't even sell beer or liquor in our grocery stores.
So,
and this is like a functioning bar that if you Yelp about bars in this area, it is like top of the list, because the beers are super cheap there and people just love it. And you just go to Ralph's, you get nice and drunk, and then you
hook up.
Yeah. It's got to be good people watching, at least, because you have just a supermarket of people walking around you. But yeah, I always, as the person who is soberly walking through that grocery store with my child, I always like look at that. I'm like, those people are like getting day drunk right now while I'm like, you know, food shopping. That's weird.
It's like a speed dating.
I don't know. It's fun. It's fun to like bring those two worlds together. Why not?
Yeah.
All right.
I would never get day drunk there, because I feel like I have to go to the grocery store and then I start drinking and then I'd be like, I don't really fucking need lettuce.
I need food.
Let me just get some burritos and that's it.
Right. I'm going to fill up on beer anyway.
All right, let's get into it, you guys. We're trying to take a sample of what people are talking and thinking about right now, global, national shared consciousness. I wanted to talk about a new study that is sort of on a subject we were already talking about this week. So there's a new study that the New York Times reported on earlier this week that says that friends' brainwaves link up. So basically, a lot of scientists, there's all this evidence that friendlessness can be poisonous. That's why we were talking about it recently, that you know, there are a lot of scientists who think that anxiety and depression being sort of these epidemics in our modern society, the reason is because we're becoming more and more socially isolated from each other. And, you know, it's just natural for humans to be part of these social groups and social networks that are actual social networks that interact with each other in person. And so they're trying to figure out, like, what is it about friendships that are so healthy? Like, how do friendships interact with the human mind and body to, you know, be these really valuable things? And so they did this study where they hooked friends up to brain scanners, and they found that the friends responded so similarly to these videos that they showed them. They showed them a video on the dangers of college football, how water behaves in outer space, and that viral video of Liam Neeson trying to do improv comedy.
Wait, what? From the Ricky Gervais?
Yeah, which is so good. But they brain scanned people while they were watching all these different videos. And friends were so similar that they could actually look at the brain scans and tell who were friends without, like, having any external things. Like, basically people's brains, like, in the same way, there's that thing we were trying to figure out if it's an urban legend, but the idea of, like, the dorm of women in college, like, their cycles linking up, which I'm pretty sure is not an urban legend, actually happens. It's like that, but our brains just kind of meld together. And I don't know. It's interesting. They have all these scientists talking about how, you know, we are basically paying attention and processing the world around us in a similar way. And it's almost like we have this weird, I think a scientist, Kevin Ochsner, nailed it, called it a ineffable shared reality between friends, which is interesting.
Damn. That makes sense, because I'll watch, like, a show or something with, like, good friends, and, like, we'll say, like, the same thing as a reaction to something that comes on the TV.
Yeah.
And you look at each other and you're like, ha, ha, or you'd be like, I was just about to say that.
Right.
Exactly. I guess it's that exact phenomenon.
I'm trying to thin the herd of my friend group, so I want to hook it up with all of my friends and find out which ones don't match and be like, you're not really one of my friends. Yeah. You're out, Mike. You're done.
He's like, but I was there for you during that breakup. Nah, bro. But we're not reacting to this Liam Neeson video the same way. So you got to fuck out of here.
Yeah. This makes sense of a couple of sort of behaviors. One, the people who speak, like, really authoritatively, like, Radiohead sucks. Like, you know, like, or, you know, says something where it's like, well, you know, that's just your opinion, but it makes sense because they're used to interacting with their friends. So they just think that, like, things that are opinion are sort of matter-of-fact statements. Right. And it also makes sense of my, like, intense anxiety anytime I am watching a movie with somebody else. I'm always, like, worried about how they're reacting to the movie.
Wow.
And, like, whether they like it or whether they're laughing at the same thing as me, which is why my favorite thing in the world is, what are you laughing at? They're like, it's a comedy.
Right, right.
Like,
I know.
Totally.
Yeah, but you thought that joke was funny, right? Oh, yeah.
But that's why going to the movies by myself is, like, my favorite thing to do.
Oh, it's king. I had dinner plans tonight with Willard, but they got canceled, so I'm going to see Truth or Dare by myself. It's
nice.
Be so great.
Oh, wow.
So excited.
That powerhouse film.
Yeah.
Yeah. But it makes sense that the stakes are high for me because that's, like, an actual judgment of, I don't know, whether you're friends with somebody.
Right.
Yeah. So that's a thing. Let's take a quick break, and we'll be right back. And we're back, and we wanted to check in with the Southern New York District Attorney's raid on Michael Cohen's office. I don't think I got that right, but whoever raided Michael Cohen's office.
Southern District of New York.
Southern District.
U.S. Attorney's Office.
There it is. So what's going on? What's happening, Miles?
Well, today, let's see, there's a couple things. First, we find out that I think Michael Cohen is dropping his lawsuits that he has against BuzzFeed because they published the Steele dossier, which is a total fucking lie and has nothing to do with me. I don't know why I'm even in there because I've never been to Prague, is kind of his defense.
Right. And so to prove it, he showed us a photograph of the front of his passport.
That means, yep. Oh, okay.
Here's a picture of a passport.
So I think the choice is clear, the jury. I was never there. So, yeah, he's dropping those lawsuits, and that can mean a couple things, right? On one side, he can avoid turning over sort of any documents or anything that has to, or have to answer any questions as part of these cases, because inevitably he would have to, because they would be like, well, what are you saying is a lie that you didn't go to Prague? Can you prove that?
Right.
And he probably doesn't want to do that. And then he also risks that information actually being publicly disclosed and then also possibly being used against him in the federal criminal probe against him. So probably good to just dead that. So, you know, nothing has to be done. Mm-hmm. The other side of it could be, now if you want to be living like the world where Lawrence O'Donnell lives on MSNBC, where every night he's like cry coming to the disaster that is like Trump's White House. It's crazy. His show is insane. He's like, oh, the president is in terrible, terrible shape tonight. It's like way over the top even for anyone. But anyway, his whole thing, you know, if you want to look at it from that side of things, you could also, you know, jump to the conclusion that did the FBI actually seize documents in that raid that basically directly contradicts his defense of I've never been there,
right?
And knows, oh, shit, well, that lawsuit is basically unwinnable at this point if I left receipts in my shoebox and they have that. And, you know, it could also be that he heard, and we talked about this, I think, yesterday, about how McClatchy was reporting, according to two sources, that Mueller actually had proof that Michael Cohen was literally in Prague to, like, literally fucking collude with the Russians. Like, that is the most, like, hardcore collusion bit, because the whole point of them meeting was to figure out, like, their agenda was, quote, on how how deniable cash payments were to be made to hackers who had worked in Europe under Kremlin direction against the Clinton campaign, and various contingencies for covering up these operations and Moscow's secret liaison with the Trump team more generally.
Right. That's it's what the part of the dossier where it's like, okay, now clearly this didn't happen. Like, this is too over the top that, like, his fixer goes to Prague to meet with, like, Russia.
Yeah.
And be like, here's the money for the hackers.
And how do we hide
helping
that?
Us win?
Also, what's our plan for covering this collusion up?
Right.
Like, is literally on the agenda. So, yeah, that's some new news. Again, we'll see where that goes, because this
also,
thing
we
is
keep,
always
We keep name-dropping McClatchy, who are still the only people who are reporting that they have confirmation behind the scenes that the Prague thing has been confirmed. What is McClatchy? I don't think I've ever heard of it before this story. Are they just like a left-wing journalistic institution?
Yeah, exactly. They just do a lot of politics, national news, world news.
Okay.
Yeah, and I think they're D.C.-based, so that's kind of, you know.
Good to know.
They, you know, they're out here. But anyway, so that's one thing. The next thing we find out is that basically their reports, I think, I guess over the weekend, Trump talked to one of his old lawyers about you know, Michael Cohen. He seems very concerned about this raid on Michael Cohen. And it seems to be that the murmurs are coming out of the White House that Trump and White House insiders are very concerned that Michael Cohen will, and they use the word, flip. Now, that's an interesting word, because if you flip, that means someone's usually fucking guilty that you're flipping on. So I don't understand, like, if it was, if Trump didn't do anything or people didn't do anything bad, you wouldn't call that flipping. You'd say, oh, we were afraid he's just going to, like, malign these people and lie or whatever. But the fact that they're saying flip is weird. But
right,
I guess
it's not like wrestling. It's not, you don't just, like, decide to be a bad guy who's a different person now. Flipping is what you do if you have information that you're going to give someone else.
Right. They're like, hi, can I tell on somebody so you don't put me in trouble as bad?
Right. Yeah. So this guy who Trump called, like, an actual lawyer, not like Michael Cohen, like a real lawyer
step
who has, like, lawyerly advice. Trump asked him, should I be worried about this? And the guy put it like this. He said, and this is, by the way, being reported by the Wall Street Journal, who had access to this conversation.
I think
that
Politico,
happened over the
too,
weekend.
Has stuff about this as well.
Yeah, but Wall Street Journal being, like, a Murdoch-owned outlet. So this is being reported by both sides. The guy said, all right, so if we're on a loyalty scale of 1 to 100, 100 being most loyal. Michael Cohen is not even a 1.
Shit.
So this surprised me, because I think I have this inherent misconception that guys like Michael Cohen, like mafiosa type guys who are like, I'd do anything for Mr. Trump. I'd jump in front of a bullet for him. Like, those guys are super loyal. I think it's just based on The Godfather and, like, other mobster movies.
I mean, I imagine, because everything that they do is informed by TV and film.
Mm. Right.
So.
Yeah, but I guess when you look at mafiosa and people who are in the mafia, the idea of them being loyal doesn't, like, actually match reality. They tend to turn on each other for nothing if right. it gets them a discount at the corner sandwich shop. And a lot of the stuff that we think of as being sort of legitimate mafia behavior actually started with The Godfather, and then the mafia started, like,
copying the movie?
It. Yeah, basically, because they were like, man, that looked cool.
Damn, that would be a better way to run this business if people had honor and shut the fuck up.
Right. I edited an article by Cesari back at Cracked where we wrote about how that's the direction that, like, the thing went. It was from the movies to the mafia. Cesari, what was his last name?
Cesari Jan Strzuchowicz?
Yes, that's the man. This article, we quoted a mafiosa, this hitman, Anthony Fiato, described the movie's effect on the most badass Boston gangster he knew by saying that he started out as a dems and does kind of guy, and after the movie came out, he starts to, like, articulate and, like, start philosophizing about stuff because he saw The Godfather.
That must be so difficult to be in that crime syndicate with just, like, the worst boss in the world who sees a movie and is like, guys, we're all wearing suits now. Right. You all have to call me Don now.
Right, exactly.
If he's seen those movies, he should also know it doesn't end well for these people.
Right.
Right.
You can do all that, but you should also be shitting yourself, because if you're also basing this off these movies, you'd be like, okay, and then eventually I'm going to get caught up in this.
I saw the first third of the first two Godfather movies. We're doing it.
I didn't even see. Wait, they massacred his son? Right. Oh.
In other Trump news. Yeah. The president had this big secret about Mike Pompeo going over to North Korea, having a secret meeting with them, that there were these talks going on between the United States and North Korea, but they were secret talks. And the media was kind of catching wind of this, and they were trying to get him to comment on it. He was walking with the Japanese prime minister and his wife, and Melania, and they're walking down at Mar-a-Lago, and he's not going to obviously comment on whether these talks are actually taking place because
Very
it's
secret.
A huge secret. But the media, for some reason, thinks they can get him to answer these questions. This was actually brought to our attention by The Daily Show last night. They did a great segment pointing out just the way Trump just can't fucking help himself. So you're gonna hear laughter in the background. That's because this clip is from The Daily Show.
Who in the administration has talked with North Korea directly, sir?
Have you been speaking directly with him?
Yes.
So basically, two journalists are asking and making it sound cool. Have you been speaking with North Korea?
Yeah.
And he's walking away. This is just supposed to be a photo op, and he's walking away from the cameras and then, like, stops. And then does this, like, dramatic turn, and with a shit-eating grin on his face, he's like, yes.
It's fucking crazy.
It's just amazing.
Because his back, he's like, I'm not answering that. I'm not. It's like almost like Abe was like, don't fucking say nothing. Just keep walking, bro. And he's like, I'm sorry, bro. Mask off.
Yes, we're doing it.
That's me. Secret talker.
And then they were like, so you are speaking with the North Koreans? And he was like, well, not me, technically,
right.
He later clarified, but he liked the way it sounded, that, like, he was doing the talking.
Right.
He's the decider. He's president deals. He's going to get the shit done. Now, what we're learning in these secret talks, quote, secret talks, is that North Korea is being really, like, they're agreeing to shit that different administrations have been trying to get them to agree to forever. Like, that they're willing to discuss denuclearization even if America doesn't withdraw from the Korean Peninsula.
Right.
Like, even if we don't demilitarize the whole peninsula, which is crazy. Nobody has gotten that sort of concession from them. No. So
was always a non-starter.
Right.
Every time before this, it was like, y'all want to talk? Get those 28 whatever thousand troops out of fucking South Korea, and then we'll talk. And it's why I was like, absolutely not.
Right. So people are trying to figure out why they're willing to make all of these concessions to have this conversation with President Trump. Do we think that there's an outside chance that they just feel like this is the most easily manipulatable human being in the history of negotiations, and they just like want to get him in a room and are saying like anything they can to get him there? Because, I mean, I'm not saying it's easy to manipulate him, but he just got him to reveal a secret meeting by just making it sound like it was his idea. So I don't know.
I think so. I can't imagine any other scenario where it makes sense personally. Because they see they've got the biggest dummy on the planet, and I feel like they'll even surprise themselves, get him in a room, and be like, "No, Mr. President, we're not going to ask for the moon or anything. You can have it. The moon is yours."
Right. As long as you say nice things about me.
God, it's so weird. It's just so weird. Right. I thought, because the traditional thinking was Kim Jong-un needs nuclear weapons to stay in power because everyone always compares it to like Saddam or like, you know, Gaddafi or whatever. It's like once you give up your like ace in the hole, they're going to come in, roll you out, and then you're dead.
Right.
You know what I mean? And the whole regime change thing happens. It seems like for whatever reason, they see, based on this logic, that's not a deterrent anymore. Like they're like, oh, yeah, we're willing to talk. If that's what you want, then great. I don't know if they're getting assurances from like other governments that are like, look,
right, dude, that could
get
also
rid
be
of your
case.
Nukes, bro. And if shit pops off, like we'll hook you up with someone on the side.
Right.
Like, I don't know, because clearly there's been some technology sharing from the Russians over the last few years. But yeah, I mean, on the surface, that's a good sign.
Yeah.
But
seems
again,
like things are going in the right
knowing
direction.
That. When Trump also said, like, if it looks like it's not going anywhere, I'm going to leave.
Right.
Like, that is also, who knows? I mean, that could also be North Korea's setup move for them to be like, well, we tried.
Yeah.
And this dude just straight up walked out. And
which his actual quote for that was, if it's not fruitful, I will get up and respectfully leave. Which, first of all, no, you won't. You're not going to respectfully leave. You're going to fart your way out of a chair and say something terrible.
Right.
You're going to tantrum your way. Wait, what was the story that we were talking about last
week?
About
last week we were talking about how during the Bush or Reagan, I think it was when Bush, H.W. Bush, was coming into office, Trump was literally trying to, based on his successful book, The Art of the Deal, become like some huge diplomatic position. And he obviously didn't get the job. And when he met the guy who did, he was like, here's how I would handle the Russia thing. I would sit them down in a room, make sure they're comfortable, very comfortable, and then I would say, fuck you, and then walk out. It's like, what?
Oh, boy.
Man. So.
But he might need a translator.
We're fucked. I mean, so an alternate theory, being incredibly generous to Trump on sort of what's going on with the North Korea thing, is that his mania has worked in a way. Like the whole Nixon madman theory where he was like, as long as they think that I'm crazy, they'll be scared shitless of the United States. So some people are saying maybe that worked. Maybe by being like the asshole outsider, he brought North and South Korea together because they're out of just sheer terror.
Yeah.
And, you know, this would also tie into this overall image of Trump that you will still see some of his supporters supporting, where he's crazy like a fox, where he's like secretly acting like an idiot. And now he's going to get them to the table and he's going to fucking kill them because he's President Deals.
Right.
So he's going to get them to.
Well, and I'm sure for like North Korea, like they do tests and they're used to like normal diplomacy where they'll be like, hey, we're going to call the UN and we'll just talk about this. And this dude's just like, I don't give a fuck. I have rockets that are bigger than yours. Pull up. And it's just like, oh my God. I even like North Korea, I'm like, this is fucking frightening.
Right.
This guy is just called us out on Twitter and he's unhinged.
Yeah.
So, I mean, So maybe that somehow worked. Could be that the sanctions got to the point where clearly, right, a lot of the reporting has been inside of North Korea is that because there's such like the food situation is so bad and people are starting to get more restless about sort of like the lack of freedom that they have, that he could also be looking at like a increase, like, you know, he might have to just do something to get the country right.
Kim Jong-un. Yeah. At the same time, if that is true, if it's the sanctions putting pressure on him, then it must be something about Trump's approach that is also working, because we've been sanctioning the shit out of them forever, and it wasn't working before. They weren't coming to the table before, so
right.
maybe they are scared of him.
Or Xi was like, look, dude, I've met this guy. He's a fucking idiot.
You should just get in a room.
I'm sorry,
with
him. I'll pay whatever it costs to like denuclearize, but we can't have this guy. It's going to get South Korea fucked up when that fallout reaches the mainland China. You know what I mean? Like, they could also be like, I've met this dude, and I don't even know if he knows what the fuck he's talking about.
With everyone except President Trump settling down and being more normal, it reminds me of the time many years ago that a bunch of us did acid, and we had a person who was like the trip sitter to make sure that everyone was on their good best behavior and not doing anything wrong and not getting into trouble. And acid is a thing that takes like hours and hours and hours. And at one point I took a shower, and then I came out. People in the room were like, hey, settle a bet. We thought you were in the shower for – he thought you were in there for like 5 seconds, and I thought you were in there for 2 hours. How long were you in there for? And I was like, guys, let's ask our trip sitter. And they were like, she's gone. And
oh, no.
We were like, oh, no, we have to be the adult in the room.
Right, Jesus Christ.
That's what it feels like. As soon as there's not like an authority figure, all the people who used to be blustering their insanity was like, oh, wait.
Oh, shit.
Okay, we need to like straighten our acts. It was really fun to pretend to be an evil dictator before, but now that there are no more adults in the room, we gotta really calm down.
Right, that is a perfect metaphor because Asia has always reminded me of a room full of people trying acid.
Yeah, the classic LSD form of diplomacy. Yeah.
I should have amended what I said earlier that my parents and also cops don't listen to this episode, please.
Yeah, so I don't know. Are we ready for a world in which Trump brings peace to the Koreas?
I don't give a fuck. Yeah, I'm down with peace. If he does it, fine. Like, I'm not going to begrudge him for getting shit done, you know what I mean? Even if it is in this bizarre fucking weird way. But if that brings us back from the brink of, like, full-scale nuclear conflict in that area, great.
Yeah, but it's the same. One of the things that he said on the campaign trail when they were talking about healthcare, and this wasn't like a GOP talking point or anything like that. He's just a dummy who says what he thinks people want to hear. It's like, listen, when I'm president, everyone's going to have better healthcare than they had before, and it's going to be cheaper, and you're going to love it.
And it'd be better.
If you can fucking do that, man.
I would love it.
8 more years. Yeah. Come on.
Karen McDougs settled so she can tell her story. I don't want to hear it. I'm
tired of hearing about anybody having sex with Donald Trump.
Yeah, apparently Stormy Daniels is going to like describe the president's dick.
I mean, like, that's my assumption now. I know she's going to be in Penthouse.
Right.
And they're saying like there'll be another description of the affair, which I'd imagine if it's in Penthouse, it's going to be fucking graphic.
Right, because the one thing everybody was asking themselves during the Anderson Cooper thing is, why isn't he asking about the president's dick? What did it look like?
Is it weird?
Yeah, almost definitely. So,
but that's what's written in Penthouse. And then I saw the president's penis. It was weird.
Well, that's all the time we have.
And, yeah, exactly.
Yeah, so I don't know.
Let's
just move on from it, guys.
Yeah, that's
great.
That's
perfect.
It's a non-story.
Right.
I guess really when you weigh all the real things that are problems, but these are still getting headlines.
Yeah. I mean, if it ends up being a thing where they committed financial crimes and it allows them to uncover more financial crimes, more worse financial crimes, then sure. Finally, we just wanted to talk about MySpace and Tom, because this is an alternate reality where that site still exists. No, because people were talking about him, I guess, in the aftermath of the Zuckerberg testimony in front of Congress. People suddenly started getting wistful for a social media entrepreneur who didn't seem like a mannequin brought to life by an enchanted booster seat. So Zuckerberg was, you know, while he was being questioned, MySpace started trending on Twitter, and Tom was basically memeified. And our writer, J.M. McNabb, pointed out that MySpace, in the time since like everybody stopped using MySpace, they have just been going around trying to sell all the information they gathered about people and successfully doing it. So the first thing MySpace did was sell to Rupert Murdoch for $580 million.
Jesus.
They were owned by News Corp for a little while. That didn't go well. And he sold them for, I think, 30-something, which 35, which I don't think is as big as $580 million.
That's what super producer Nick Stumpf would call a bath.
He got Rupert Murdoch to take a bath.
Rupert Murdoch took an absolute bath.
they're now owned by Time Inc. And, you know, they are Time Inc. and MySpace are linking up, you know, all the information Time Inc. has from their magazine subscriptions and emails when people sign up for newsletters with the MySpace data to have access to over a billion registered users globally and Ooh. Over 465 million email addresses in the U.S. So MySpace's pool of registered data is, you know, they're saying it can serve as the centerpiece of a major new cross-channel marketing initiative. So MySpace still managed to be...
Yeah, they were doing it before Zuckerberg.
Right, exactly. And the further back, I feel like from this point forward, now that we're aware of it, things might get better. But nobody was innocent back in the day. Like, everybody was just doing a mad grab for as much data as they could steal.
No one raised these questions in public.
Right.
It's funny to think that basically MySpace is being a fucking graveyard of like data. They're still able to be like with other techno, like, you know, with the other information they have, try and be like, oh, wait, we can match. Oh, this is probably you based on this email address or right. whatever. And we still have, I guess they know that I really liked Gnarls Barkley right. back yeah. in 2005.
Yeah, but... that's the good news is that they're going to be hitting you up with like, hey, so you like Crazy by Gnarls yeah. Barkley, and, eh?
and like... Tila Tequila's the hottest, isn't she?
Yeah, I'm trying to think what data they had. They'd come at me and be like, you still rocking that band? No.
Yeah, right. No, exactly.
We broke up 10 years ago, MySpace.
I was trying to crazy, huh,
sell
Dan?
Me microphones.
right. Still playing at the Kibitz Room? No.
All right, we're going to take a quick break. And we're back, and it is 419,
Woo!
One less than 420, Hitler's birthday, the chillest day of all. It's all 420, National
day, dude.
Weed Day, I don't know.
All right,
what do you call it?
All right, Pappy. All right. We all know right. the narcs
are. I'll let
are.
You take it from here, Miles.
Take it from here. Yeah, well, bro, let's talk about 420. Really, I want to talk about drug policy. there was the International Journal of Drug Policy just released a little bit of a report on their sort of analysis of just sort of the different forms of like drug policy that is out there, especially in the United States. Like, after many conferences, like the leading drug policy experts, they are kind of concluded, or just, you know, they did some research with economists, criminologists, other people, and be like, okay, let's look at the different forms of drug laws we have. So we'll talk specifically about weed since it's, you know, 419. In this country, it's, you know, absolute prohibition that we have here where it's just completely illegal from a federal standpoint and you just can't have it. No way. And then there's decriminalization, which sort of how it was in this state when there was medical marijuana, like when it was first introduced, where you could consume and possess it, but it wasn't considered a full-on criminal offense. But the drug was still considered illegal. But now that we have recreational use laws, we're more in like the state control of the market, which is where the state can sort of regulate everything from the age limits to control of production and sales, where we're not quite there where the government is actually controlling the means of production, but they do have real regulations that make the market sort of safe for consumers where they have it tested to make sure you're not, you know, smoking crazy pesticides or have it in proper packaging to make a child safe and things like that. And then you have the unfettered free market where drugs are just treated no differently than any consumer good, like a fucking hat.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Can I ask a very dumb question about the state of legalization in California right
yeah.
now? Does it mean that I could go into a MedMen or a weed store and buy a marijuana cigarette and then walk down the street and smoke it in the world?
No, so you can't smoke it in public. You can consume it privately, mm-hmm. but you cannot consume it out in the open. So, yes, you could go into a MedMen and buy your jazz cigarette and do your thing.
Like an edible. Like, is it? Like,
I mean, no one's gonna know.
No one's gonna
I
mean, know like, if the gummy bears are like magic gummy bears.
Yeah, unless you're like, unless you're being so aggressive, where you're like, hey guys, I'm about to eat one of those weed candies.
Mm-hmm. I would be aggressive. Like when I go to Vegas and they allow you to drink in the street, I look at cops when I do it because I'm really enjoying the freedom. So if I did have weed gummy bears, I would scarf them down in front of a cop, being like, "This doesn't look like a crime, does it?"
Yeah, just have like the big bag open, like, "Oh, what could these be?" I don't know.
I would not suggest scarfing down edibles, by the way. But maybe take one to a half.
No, here, like, let's do a little experiment later.
But what if I'm trying to be, like, nasty in front of a cop?
Yeah, that's true.
I mean, I hope it's worth that bit.
Right.
Yeah, nice. So, I mean, it's just interesting. I think for most people, we probably realize that the complete criminalization of marijuana was an absolutely absurd idea. But again, it's just good to know we're moving closer and closer to acceptance and kind of embracing it in a way that's creating tremendous tax revenues and can be put to good use, especially when you look at things like when you have states where teachers are literally about to, like, striking because they're not getting the proper pay and things like that. Wow, you could probably use a couple hundred million in tax revenue in a state like that to do some shit. So, you know, again, I'm probably preaching to the choir to some people who listen, but again, I think you check out this study that we'll post to in the footnotes, you know, just so you can learn yourself a little bit about how these forms of drug policy affect us in different ways and what might be best going forward.
So which one came out on top? Is there a country that, like, has the policy that we should be trying to
adopt? I mean, they weren't looking at it so much as, like, a country we should adopt because, again, they're sort of looking at it through the lens of, like, the United States, too, and what that means for consumers in this country. But, again, it seems like the most sort of from, like, the benefits and cost of it, like, state control has, like, the highest social impact that's positive and the highest
health
impact.
States' rights is what you're arguing for.
States' rights,
bro.
As
usual.
As usual, man. If you don't want to bake somebody a cake, you don't got to.
Right.
You know what I mean? Because that's your right, bro. You know how I get down. Yeah. No, and that's a joke in case somebody's listening for the first time. That's not my real stance.
Breaking news, Kid Cudi and Kanye are making an album together. Daniel just saw that across the transom.
They went through a rough time together.
Yeah.
And now they're back. I like to see that.
Is that right around when Drake's album drops? Because didn't Drake have a Kid Cudi beef?
Oh, shit. And yeah, I think Drake's comes out at the end of June or?
Nice.
We'll see what happens. With the Scorpion.
Scorpion. And finally, we want to talk about Starbucks, who are going to be solving racism in May when they're closing 8,000 company owned U.S. cafes for the afternoon to train nearly 175,000 employees on how to prevent racial discrimination in stores. That's happening on May 29th.
Okay, so if you're white and you work at a Starbucks and you want to be racist, get it in now.
Right. Get it all out of your system, guys.
Get it out. Call the police on me when I ask for the unicorn Frappuccino.
That's the purple and pink one?
That was a limited time only. Now I only drink the pink drink, but that's another story. But yeah, I guess, I mean,
are you looking forward to this, Miles? I mean, this is going
to
be...
I had to stop going to Starbucks because of this bullshit.
You're boycotting it?
Yeah, I mean, it's... I think I stopped doing it because it made me uncomfortable at first. Mm-hmm. I do acknowledge that, you know, on one hand, a lot of people will look at this and say, oh, this is a good PR move. Of course you need to do that after the big goof in Philadelphia. But also, a credit to Starbucks because there are many businesses who have shit like that and realize that they can move on with business as usual and it won't affect their bottom line.
Right.
But Starbucks, I think, understands that they're kind of different. Like, people want to go into a Starbucks and want to feel like that's a place you can go to. Even if it is not even to buy a drink, you know what I mean? Like, just be like, oh, I can pop in. You know what I mean? Like, it's based on feeling inviting. That's why people go there with their laptops to write their pilots all day.
Right.
But I think they do understand that, wow, like, if we're not actually actively promoting an atmosphere of inclusion, that does affect our business.
Right.
So in one sense, I'm like, you know, credit to you. That's smart business sense because you're at least acknowledging, like, what is really important to their business.
Yeah.
And knowing that, like, yeah, we can't have people feeling like they're going to get fucking harassed or whatever by the police just because they're not white or whatever and sitting down. And then at the other part, I'm like, well, you think you can solve it in one fucking day?
Right, in one afternoon.
In which case, I would say this to Starbucks. If you're going to take the time to be like, we're going to have this implicit bias class on May 29th, the new Juneteenth.
Right.
You know what I mean? We're going to solve it once and for all. Now, how about this, Starbucks? If one of y'all fuck up one more time, can you just, like, give ownership of your company over to, like, the victims of your harassment or things like, what's your fail-safe here to make sure that you guys follow through on this? I mean, obviously, that's impossible, but, you know, I want them to also set up a bar for themselves if they're saying they're really serious about it. Mm-hmm. Then let's talk about other things aside from just an afternoon of talk about it.
I'd also really like to see their curriculum that day, like what that class is going to look like.
We will leak the shit out of that. That's good
because I'm really curious about that because I think what they're doing is probably good and also definitely a PR move. And it just I'm curious about the curriculum because people and businesses do this a lot. They get caught doing something bad and they're like, I'm going to go to rehab for a month, 10 days. I'm going to disappear for a while, or I'm going to meet with these people. I'm going to have this conversation. And it always seems like I'm going to do this thing you can't see. And then when I'm done, we'll all agree that I'm cured, that things are better now. And it always feels pretty bullshitty to me. So I'm just like, and I'm also just like broadly curious, like, what is a one-day class on ending racism?
Hold on. An afternoon.
Has there ever been a corporate, like, team-building session that has been effective in any way?
No.
Other than just being, you know, a pep rally.
Well, you know how they had, like, sexual harassment training and then no one did sexual harassment in the workplace
ever
again?
Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah. So that worked there.
Yeah.
Also, like, how do you think they can get 175,000 employees on the same page to take the exact same training the exact same time? Like, I don't feel like that's possible, like, especially with part-time work. Some people are not, they're like, yo, I don't work on Wednesday, or I don't work on the 29th. I mean, it's just, again, that's not really a main issue, but I just think about the logistics of it. It seems also very big.
This is also part of a pattern for the CEO, Howard Schultz, I believe his name is. And let's not forget about 2015's Race Together campaign, in which customers and baristas were encouraged to delve into America's issues with race while they were waiting for their drinks. Mm. And that was a bad idea. That was like one of the all-time bad ideas. So, you know, hopefully he's not too involved in whatever the curriculum is.
Hi, welcome to Starbucks. What's your race?
Yeah. Right.
Now, I can see by looking at you that you're not white. Has that been difficult? Would you like to talk about that over this coffee?
Sir, are you Filipino? No. Oh, you look like it. Okay, well, I'm black and Japanese. Oh, that's cool. You want an espresso? Bro, just give me these sous vide egg bites and let me go.
And one thing to look out for, some conservative forums have been distributing these hoax coupons that are basically Starbucks coupons that give people of color a free coffee. And it just says, we're sorry, we know we can do better. Starbucks values all people of color, and we are working on employee sensitivity training. And it's like a coupon for a free something or other. Those are fake. So
wow.
Yeah.
What do they even think that achieves, right? They're like, oh, can you believe it? They're giving black people free coffee because of this.
Exactly.
Is that's that really?
It. Yeah. Yeah, look how crazy the PC world has gone.
Yeah, right?
Yep.
Okay, cool. Yeah. I mean, shit, I'm going to, you know what? I might just print one of those up and take it in. And then start a real fucking problem.
What a Starbucks.
I'm like, I got this. What the fuck are you saying?
Yeah.
So you're not sorry? Oh, hell no.
I would actually really like to see how they respond to that.
There'll just be a bunch of nervous people behind the counter like,
shit.
You'll have to wait until the 29th. I don't know how I feel about this yet.
All people of color.
I haven't learned yet.
All people of color. Check out the footnotes, because I'm sure there'll be a link to that thing. We're going into Starbucks, getting that free coffee.
Daniel.
Yeah.
It has been a pleasure having you. As always, where can people find you?
You can find me at Twitter at @DOB_INC. That's DOB Incorporated. You can also find my Instagram. People have asked a lot of questions about this because I frequently say you can find me there, but don't.
Don't, but don't.
What I mostly mean is, like, that's the place where I'm not as public-faced. Like, Twitter is very much, this is Dan from the internet. Let's talk and whatnot. Instagram, I'm more likely to delete your comment or block you if you do anything that I don't like. I'm just not like going to engage with strangers on Instagram, is my point.
Okay.
My problem is I do.
You do?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm lonely, though.
That's fine.
Where's that, Miles?
Oh, on Twitter and Instagram, at Miles of Gray.
Well, how about that? You can find me at Jack_O'Brien on Twitter. You can find us at Daily Zeitgeist on Twitter. We're at The Daily Zeitgeist on Instagram. We have a Facebook fan page and a website, dailyzeitgeist.com, where we post our episodes and our footnotes.
Footnotes.
We link off to the information that we talked about in today's episode. Miles.
Yeah.
What are we riding out on today?
Oh, man. This is a track by Raven Lanae called Sticky. Because it's about that sticky. I mean, she says the words in it. I'm not entirely sure that the lyrics are about the magical plant, but it's just a really great track. She has an amazing voice, and it's produced by this other amazing R&B performer, producer, Steve Lacy. It's just got, like, you know, it's got a little bounce to it, and I hope you enjoy it, because I like it. So, yeah, boom, Sticky, Raven Lanae, get into
it. All right, we're going to ride out on that. We will be back tomorrow for a special 420 episode.
Whoa!
Talk to you guys then. Bye.
you gonna say if I